Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope.
We had wrestling in gym.
Oh, yeah. That was not a joy.
I was probably the only... I held a book during wrestling. When it was my turn to wrestle, I have a book out there. That's how into it I was.
And the Bulldog.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Has that been proven yet, by the way? Has that been shown about fish?
I'm in the lake almost every day during the summer, and I got no issues with fish.
But it might not be mutual.
That's right. I mean,
coexist peacefully.
Like, what is this guy again?
That was actually a real quote. From a president, which at one time would have seemed outlandish.
Right.
Welcome back. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here on WGR, joined now by Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com, who joins us via the West Her Hotline. Bill, Mike, and Chris here. Thanks for being on with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I've been a fan of yours for a long time. This is our first conversation Bulldog has had you on. And if I may tell you, I strive to be you when it comes to Twitter. Because you just have like the perfect touch, I think, when you're, what is the term, Bulldog, quote tweeting or sub tweeting?
I'm not sure what you're referring to, but that is a term.
I think when you're doing that, it's going to be good. And there are lots of times when I want to do that, but I think it's not quite at the Barnwell level. So I will pull back. So, I mean, what kind of thought or strategy goes into this? For you
on Twitter?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. You know, I think it's always just like I'm always intrigued by what people have to say because, you know, I certainly don't know everything. There's still a lot of people out there that do have insights. So, but I also find at the same time, I think I have an idea in my head of, you know, the range of opinions people might have about a sports topic, and it always shocks me when there's someone who just appears to have absolutely no idea of what is happening. And those people seem to find me on Twitter more often than not, I suppose.
Yeah, that is probably consistent with almost everyone. Yeah, that's how it goes.
Do you when you're tweeting, do you think about maybe some certain person or group of people that might be reading it, or do you just not even worry about that?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think it's just if we can have a little bit of fun with it. You know, I don't take Twitter super seriously, so I think if people have fun with it, you know, it's all in good fun, I suppose.
The only real filter I think I have, and this probably isn't the way to do it, because I should maybe consider, I don't know, like my family or potential employers for my children or where I work. But I generally think, does singer-songwriter Jason Isbell like this? Because he follows me, and I don't want to lose him. If I lose him as a follower, it will be the most devastating Twitter occurrence of my life.
How often do you check to make sure you haven't? Every day?
He tweets pretty regularly. So, no, I don't, not every
you just
day.
You scroll over it?
Every now and then.
His name?
He was just in town. Right. He was just in town at the beginning of July, if Canada counts. He was in Niagara Falls, Ontario. So I looked then. Like, is he still following me? Yeah, okay, good. All right, still got him.
All right.
Don't ostracize Jason Isbell. That's my Twitter rule.
Thank you, thank you, Bill, for indulging us in this part of the conversation. All right, so NFL camps, I guess, officially are on with Denver reporting. The Bills, like most teams, are coming up. What's your general expectation for the Bills this year? It seems that they're betting line-wise where they almost always are, 7. Is there any reason in your mind to think it should be really different than that?
No, I think that's probably fair. I mean, this is obviously, I think, nationally an extremely underrated defense, second in DVOA last year, which is a very good measure of team performance. So a really impressive defense and an offense that you figure would take a step forward, given that we have, you know, a second year with Josh Allen, who, you know, I'm not, I have to be honest, particularly high on, but I think there are certainly reasons to think that he could improve dramatically. You know, certainly athleticism is there. And the weapons and offensive line around him were dramatically improved what we saw a year ago. So you'd figure, hey, if the defense stays where it is and the offense does take a big step forward, that could be a playoff team in Buffalo.
How much credit, how much credence do you give the continuity point? Because he's here. Sam Darnold is of course the same draft class, but it's a new coach and a new system. Josh Rosen's already moved on. Mayfield's got a new head coach. It's Lamar Jackson's stable. The Bills have got Brian Daboll. They've
new
got the same head coach.
Baltimore.
Yeah, new coordinator. Okay, right. So like, I'm wondering, like, how much, I don't know, how many points does that get them, you know, like in your mind? Does that increase the chances, the likelihood of it working here because they've kept the thing intact for 2 years in a row?
A little. I think it depends on the quality of the coach. I think we're still sort of evaluating where Brian Daboll is actually going to land when it comes to his abilities as an offensive coordinator and play caller. I mean, you know, you think about Jared Goff, right? You know, even though continuity would have helped with Jeff Fisher and his staff in year two, you would have rather had Sean McVay than Jeff Fisher, and I think Rob Boris was the offensive coordinator there. But you get the idea. You know, I think it's more about, you know, given equal quality coaches, continuity is better, but I think that you'd rather get the better coach, even if it means moving on from a coordinator for the second season.
How about what happened here this offseason, Bill, at wide receiver, including how they made that move for Antonio Brown that was undermined by Brown? I feel like, and I can be critical of the Bills, but I feel like they did about the best that they could when augmenting that position, and they were coming from a pretty low place. But will it be meaningful is still the question, I think, here. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I like the moves they made this offseason on the whole. I thought they did a really good job of adding depth. You know, this is not going to be about one big guy. They didn't sign the, you know, Sammy Watkins or Allen Robinson because those guys weren't on the market the way they were the year before. Maybe, you know, Buffalo might not want to go after Sammy Watkins, understandably, but you get what I'm saying. There wasn't that sort of, you know, sort of $14, $15, $16 million a year player on the market. It was more just about, you know, a little bit of more depth. So they added players who I think fit what they should want to do on offense. John Brown is going to be, ideally when he's healthy, a downfield weapon for Josh Allen. That makes total sense as far as quarterback and receiver go. Cole Beasley is going to be a guy who's going to get some easier yards for Josh Allen, some safer throws, going to be a safety valve, which is what he was for Dak Prescott in Dallas. And I think, you know, this offense might come down to whether Robert Foster looks like the guy we saw during the final few weeks of 2018, where he looked like a possible breakout receiver for the Bills. So I think it's going to be, you know, there's upside in all those positions there. You know, at the same time, you could say John Brown really didn't play well the second half of the year once Lamar Jackson got in the lineup. Cole Beasley was someone the Cowboys were happy to move on from. Robert Foster was a guy who was, a year ago, undrafted, was not seen as a possible impact player in the NFL. So I think a lot of it's going to be about what that coaching staff can get out of those players who we've seen in the right situation for a stretch of time can look like pretty talented football players.
Something that I like, the way it all shook out here, and this is irrespective of the point about them going after Antonio Brown, which is, of course, right, an entirely different class of receiver, but I'm pretty bullish on Foster, Bill, and okay. I think it would have been probably not smart to bank on him being their number one receiver. So you add guys, but they didn't exactly, you know, well, they didn't get Antonio Brown, so they didn't go out and sign a number one receiver. So they've kind of left the door open. Like, if he takes flight, I think they'll let him fly. If he doesn't, they've offset it with some insurance in Brown and Beasley and some other guys.
Yeah, and I think realistically, nothing they've done here, you know, locks them in at that position for the next 3 or 4 years, outside of maybe the Mitch Moore signing at center, where he's getting a pretty big deal. Pretty much everything else, you know, they can either move that guy to a bench or cut a player after a year and make a bigger investment if Robert Foster doesn't work out, if John Brown, you know, struggles to stay healthy, if Cole Beasley isn't the same guy he was in Dallas. They can move on from those guys, and they can go after a bigger fish in the years to come if that fish does become available. But like you said, you know, Robert Foster deserves an opportunity to see what he can do in a bigger role over the course of an entire season. And the moves they made this offseason give them depth, certainly, at a lot of positions, including receiver, but don't get in the way of a player like Robert Foster emerging as a really valuable, you know, wide receiver one, wide receiver two contributor for the Bills.
Back to fish, by the way, from the beginning of the segment. With Bill Barnwell of ESPN, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog on WGR. I must have missed this. Bulldog mentioned this to me last hour, that you had a ranking of players by skill at skill positions, like by team, and that you had the Bills above Arizona, because we were just talking about Arizona briefly. Is that right? And could you go into how you see, because I think like a lot of people, I'm kind of excited to see what Arizona is. So is that right, and how'd you get there?
Yeah, I think so. Look at what the Arizona Cardinals have on offense. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald's obviously, you know, a future Hall of Famer, but a guy who is, you know, in his late 30s or into mid-late 30s at this point. A lot of, you know, young players at receiver, but we don't know it necessarily. Christian Kirk, Akeem Butler, Andy Isabella, those guys are going to turn into. We're just not sure as of yet. David Johnson, obviously a very valuable weapon, but someone who, you know, really has 1 year of excellent production on his resume and 2 years where he was either injured or 3 years where he was either injured or a backup or not especially impressive. And I don't blame him for that. The offensive line was a disaster, but he didn't really transcend the mediocrity of that scheme and that offense last year. So I'm excited to see what Arizona has. I think the Bills are deeper at several key positions, especially actually at tight end, at running back. They're really deep at running back. They don't have that Larry Fitzgerald caliber option, obviously, and Christian Kirk is someone who I'm excited to see what happens with him this year, but I think the Bills are just, there's a lot more solid options up and down the lineup for the Bills when it comes to those skill position spots.
One thing the two teams have in common is a running back who gets paid, who has gotten paid in Johnson in Arizona and McCoy here. And that's a big topic right now, of course, in the league with Melvin Gordon threatening to sit out and even maybe Ezekiel Elliott. Bill, I feel like the book is almost closed on just how valuable the running back position is. I mean, I know that people are still debating it, and it's mostly, I think, ex-players who are sort of pushing back on this idea that, you know, running backs aren't important or something. What's right to you, and how do you see the future here?
Yeah, I don't see it getting better for running backs, especially as the league goes to a more pass-heavy attack. I think you're going to have to see, you know, backs who are versatile, guys who are like a Le'Veon Bell who catches the ball quite frequently. But I just think more and more teams are going to look at history and say, hey, well, when we hand out those contracts, how do they turn out? Do we see guys actually making, you know, delivering a return on value, or is it end up being not that exciting? And you look at the Todd Gurley deal. The Rams would get out of that deal tomorrow if they could, because they're committed to a guy who has arthritis in his knee. Contracts for guys like Chris Johnson, D'Angelo Williams, Arian Foster, DeMarco Murray, Marshawn Lynch. Not Marshawn Lynch actually was the one that kind of worked out, but those other contracts in free agency, either you had a guy who was impressive for a year and then kind of fizzled out, you had guys who struggled to stay healthy, you had guys who just stopped being productive. I mean, just it seems like you're more dependent on your offensive line and the quality of your offense as a whole than the running back sort of transcending. And you have occasional exceptions. That Adrian Peterson season comes to mind a few years ago, but that's one season over the course of the last 6 or 7 years. So I think those guys are going to get signed. I think they're too valuable to their teams to move on from. But I do think that we're entering a league where running backs are going to be one of the lower-paid positions on the offense.
I read a piece about Ezekiel Elliott at USA Today today, and I thought it was excellent. And one point it made about Elliott here in this context was he didn't really do very much split out. You know, you want to have a running back matter in the passing game and transcend this point. But I think, you know, maybe even Bell is an example, or I don't know how much Christian McCaffrey lines up outside or Barkley, but they're massive receptions numbers. Elliott's are good. Maybe that's a key piece here, is how they use the running back in the formation in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you see what the Patriots do on offense, I know that it's not necessarily the most exciting example for Bills fans rooting up the Patriots, but the Patriots have had a history of not really spending a lot of running backs. They signed Corey Dillon to an extension that didn't work out. They drafted Sony Michel in the first round, but they tend to rotate their backs and they bring in guys for relatively cheap. And the guys they do sign to extensions are your Kevin Fox and your James White, guys who are going to be catching passes out of the backfield and threatening teams in the receiving game. So what they want to rely on is just they want to have running backs who are good enough to run the ball but also good enough to split out and challenge your weakest position when it comes to your linebackers or your safeties. So I think you want to have players who don't make it obvious what you're going to do on offense from snap to snap. And look at Sean McCoy when he's healthy is one of those players for the Bills.
You mentioned the Patriots there, and we're totally fine talking about them, Bill. Appreciate the warning. But there's a lot of turnover there. Of course, Brady's still there and Belichick is still there. But on offense, I mean, Gronk is a huge loss, and you're talking about Benjamin Watson replacing him. And then, you know, the rest of the skill position guys, Hogan, Gordon, you know, not that Gordon was like a staple or anything, but he was there. Even Cordarrelle Patterson, they've lost a lot of what they did last year. Is it just assumed that they'll find productive players to make it work because they scheme so well and their quarterback is so talented?
I think it'll be somewhere between those two. You know, I think they will drop off a bit. You look at the numbers for Tom Brady with and without Rob Gronkowski. There is a dramatic difference. You know, more than, I think, 15 points of passer rating over the course of the last 7 or 8 years. So there is going to be a drop-off, but there's going to be an adjustment period. I think they were preparing for this in years past. They drafted Sony Michel. They drafted Damian Harris this year at running back. They drafted N'Keal Harry in the first round. And those guys aren't necessarily going to be, you know, immediate difference makers, but I could see them being more of a, you know, a run-first attack this year and sort of taking some of the pressure off Tom Brady to throw the ball quite as frequently as it did in years past. And, you know, when they needed a big play in years past, they had to go to Gronk. And that was the guy who, you know, if it was fourth down and they needed a first down, they went to Gronk. And they just sort of threw it up there and figured Gronk would figure it out in the air and make a big play. And more often than not, he did. So I think at this point, they have to figure out who that guy is going to be for them, whether it's going to be Edelman, whether it's going to be Harry, whether it's going to be James White or Michelle, that guy who, when Tom Brady needs to make a big play, he has to go to and just sort of hope that he can win one-on-one. Because right now, I don't necessarily see that guy on the roster.
I did see a tweet from you about the 18-game proposal. And one thing you pointed out, which is, of course, right, is that the schedule, the calendar, from the beginning of the preseason to the Super Bowl, doesn't have to be really any longer, maybe 1 week at the most longer, if they were to adjust to that. I happen to love the idea that came out last week of the 16-game player limit. I think that's really fun because I want to see coaches squirm. I want to see how it plays out if actually a guy hasn't been hurt and we're overachieving this year, and now what do? I've got to sit him for two games or something.
Right.
Do you think that's realistic, and do you think that the 18-game season, one way or another, will eventually be a thing?
I like the idea of the 16-game limit. I think it's fascinating for the reasons you said. I don't think the NFL really expected to get a lot of a lot of buy-in from the media and from players and from the Players Association on that idea. But I think it's a way for them to sort of start the idea out and then have that as a negotiating ploy. So when the players reject the other 18-game proposal, they can come in and say, hey, we gave you this one idea, you said no. We gave you this other idea, you said no. You know, what are you going to give us to make this work? Because we've already tried to work with you on declining these options that we threw out there. It's just classic negotiation. I do think we are eventually going to have an 18-game schedule. I just have to figure out, you know, what the NFL is going to do in return. I could see a scenario where we get two preseason games, we get a 20-week regular season with an 18-game schedule and two byes, so you don't have to play as many games in a row as you do right now, hopefully, and then maybe a four-week postseason like we've had in years past, but with maybe no Super Bowl bye week in between the conference championships and the Super Bowl, which would make it, I think, about the same length, maybe one week longer, but I think it's the same length as the current schedule. So I could see that happening, but I don't know if it's going to happen in this next CBA. It might be for, you know, maybe 10 years down the line or so.
Mm-hmm. One more thing I have, if I might here. Are you as excited as we are? Actually, you know what? You don't know how excited probably we are for this.
I'll tweet about it. Maybe he'll read it.
We are the absolute least excited possible for pass interference replay reviews. we want nothing less than that. This continuing expansion of replay in just all sports. I know you tweet about VAR and soccer a lot, and we're right on top of that when you do. So I think I probably know where you are here on interference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my colleague Dan Graziano tweets about this, how replay is setting the league back, how it's not making it a more fun experience. And the more he says it, the more I think about it, the more I'm inclined to agree. I mean, just, you know, I think we all want to have a scenario where that play from the NFC Championship game gets overturned. We all want that. What we don't want is replay, you know, every time it's a big pass, that a coach is going to throw out a flag desperately trying to get a pass interference call. And I think, logically, we should be able to differentiate between those two. I don't have a lot of faith in the NFL being able to create a system that does not end up with us just, you know, looking frame by frame at possible tugs and possible grabs of jerseys for pass interference calls. And I don't think that's what anybody wants right now.
Yeah, the very fact that coaches have all along here been using their challenges to challenge ball spots just tells you that this is going to be, they are not going to only use it for obvious calls. Like they will use it tactically whenever they think that they have the slightest chance. The game's almost over. I guess I might as well use it. It's just going to be, I think, untenable is what I'm expecting.
I think it's going to make the game worse.
Yeah. So do I. I just don't want it at all. I just don't want any of it. I think your colleague there is correct. Just get rid of all of it. You know, in the CFL, did you see this back a few weeks ago? In the CFL, the commissioner wrote a letter asking coaches. The phrase was clear and obvious, and maybe other sports have used the same phrase. They don't want you to challenge a call unless you think it's clear and obvious. And come on, right? Like, what coach is going to have right. that? What coach is going to go along right. with that? I mean,
I thought it was clear and obvious.
Right. That's what you said.
It clearly and obviously impacted me, so therefore I'm throwing my right. flag. That's it. Like, that's clear and obvious.
Yeah.
Right. It's the league's job, not the coach's job. To get
right. The league. Right. Okay. Very good. Thanks a lot for this, Bill. I hope we talk again.
My pleasure, guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.